This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes. Thank you, Sabrina, for the news. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Audrey Raj
and Christine Wong.
Again, we'll be with you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in touch via Twitter, we are at BFM Radio. Of course, you can get us on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. I'll try not to say any more times today. Stories we have lined up for today. Apple to launch technology-enabled healthcare service. Amazon will be have bought a smart doorbell firm. Seems a very odd thing to buy, right?
Ding, ding, ding.
Ding. Oh, dear. Then we have how one of the former CEO of Twitter explains why he's shutting down his fitness startup after just 8 months, how one of the best companies in America gives employees yay days, and then how finally Vodafone will be installing a 4G network on the moon. They're getting there faster than some of our phone providers here in KL. Right. Yes. Let's start off with then this Apple... launching the technology-enabled healthcare service. Tell me more about this, Chris.
Right, so companies like Apple are starting to take a more active role in their employees' healthcare, which includes confronting the rising cost of healthcare, along with attempts to try and improve the quality of the care their employees receive.
Because it's expensive.
Because it's very expensive. Now, one way to pull that off is by building healthcare clinics built solely for employees, which is what Apple is intending to do. They will be called AC Wellness Networks, which is just... you know, wholesome.
Apple Cupertino Wellness Networks.
Yes. Uh-huh. They'll be run independently from Apple, but will be exclusively for Apple employees. On one of the job listings, it says, AC Wellness Network believes that having trusting, accessible relationships with our patients, enabled by technology, promotes high-quality care and a unique patient experience. Two healthcare centers are planned to open in the spring in Santa Clara County, California, around Cupertino, near Apple Park and Infinite Loop headquarters. Now, the company already promotes its Apple Watch as a health monitoring device capable of more than simple fitness tracking. So it's kind of nice that they already have, you know, a convenient tie-in products that helps with the healthcare, and now they're building the healthcare networks and such. And Apple reportedly has more than 120,000 employees, and with healthcare one of the largest staffing costs, it's trying to reduce the monies on healthcare spending and also trying to improve worker health. Healthcare spending totaled $3.3 trillion, I believe, dollars in 2016 in the U.S. alone, which is an 18% share of the country's gross domestic product and 4.3% higher than the previous year. So this is intense.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. And the idea is that hopefully if there are healthcare facilities on site or near where employees spend most of their day, employees might have better access to healthcare with fewer excuses not to go to the doctor's office for routine checkups or when they're feeling under the weather. And then you kind of prevent costlier visits further down the line. So instead of putting off going to the doctor and then your cold gets even worse and then it might cost you more money, you just solve it there and then. However, very conveniently, Apple will also reportedly use its AC Wellness clinics and staff to test its own healthcare-related technologies.
I mean, we were just talking yesterday, right, about phone companies that were providing healthcare services.
Yeah.
But the difference there is that, you know, they are then reliant on another healthcare service, rather, another
insurance service. Yes.
This, though, bringing it in-house and hiring your own doctors and hiring your own whatnot, I mean, it seems smart.
It is just because U.S. healthcare is ridiculously expensive.
Right.
This has been an issue for years. Like I think Christine was mentioning earlier, they're closing in on 18% of the country's GDP when it comes to healthcare. That's healthcare costs.
But that's because you have unscrupulous people like Martin Shkreli, like, you know, raising costs of tablets from whatever they were, 30 cents up to like $78.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, by like 500%. It is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's out of control.
Right.
So this is why I think Apple is taking it in-house. And I think, wasn't it Amazon that was also looking to do something?
They were,
it
yes.
is with
yeah.
Berkshire Hathaway and
yes. JPMorgan
Chase.
Yep.
Yes. So I think this is something that most companies there recognize as a huge cost factor. And they're trying to just take it in-house. And also, you know, no more fake MCs that way.
Well, that's true. That's true, yeah.
But my question is, why not go with panel clinics like we do have here?
Good question. Let's ask people at home what they think about that then, you know. Should you have your own in-house team, or is it better off to have like a panel clinic kind of thing, you know? The thing is with panel clinics, I mean, let's be fair, you can go to a doctor on a panel clinic and say, hey, doc, I need an MC. And we know here in Malaysia, they will give you that MC, right?
Right.
All right. Yeah, let's ask that question. Panel clinics or in-house kind of medical services? Do let us know. Get us on Twitter, at BFM Radio, or on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. Any more to add, Chris?
No.
Just,
that's what it is. Please, you know, messages and stuff.
I just have a question, you know.
Go on, then.
Will Apple then house all their employees' healthcare files on their Google Cloud?
Oh, snap. Time for a little break, and then when we get back, Amazon, they're buying a smart doorbell firm. Ding dong.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. Second story of the day. Amazon have bought a US firm that makes high-tech doorbells in a move expected to help the online retailer improve how it delivers parcels. Audrey, tell me more.
Yes. So the company's name is Ring, and they make doorbells that record live videos of customers' doorsteps. And then they send this video to your smartphone.
Oh.
Yeah. So pretty much you can actually see someone come up and see who's at the door. It's, you know, little people.
And you can choose whether or not you want to answer the door.
Or not, yes. So now, this doorbell is expected to help Amazon customers trust Amazon's new service, which lets couriers open people's front doors and put your deliveries inside.
I'm still not up with that idea.
Yeah, I know you're thinking about safety, mm-hmm. and you're thinking about privacy, mm-hmm. But if you get to monitor exactly where these people are when they're at the door, if they're opening the door and just leaving it on the inside, you'd feel safer, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, how difficult is it really to get an Amazon suit or delivery outfit, courier outfit, pretend to be a courier and, you know, do some nefarious things, and you're still being filmed? But it doesn't matter, because then you can't go back and find this person, because Amazon are going to go, that's not our employee.
Well, I guess Amazon, they are confident with Ring, just because they've paid, well, more than $1 billion. Reportedly paid more than $1 billion to secure this whole Ring deal. And but both Amazon and Ring have declined to comment on the price. This was reported by Reuters. And Ring also sees some benefits to tying up with Amazon, because they feel like it will allow their doorbell service to achieve more as it develops home security products as well. So this looks like a great tie-in for Amazon, just as they're hoping to, well, up the level when it comes to home deliveries.
I like the idea then, but it also plays with the idea of trust, right? You know, how much do you trust a company, even if you've got video footage of whatever, to allow themselves to let themselves into your part of your home and leave something there and leave, you know, the stuff that they're supposed to. I don't know. I just feel a little bit uncomfortable with that.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about Amazon, you know, having that concept where the delivery person can go into your house with the smart keys
or your car,
and the locks
even.
Or the cars. And I still feel very uncomfortable about it. It feels a lot like an invasion of privacy still. Mm. And maybe the company can be trustworthy, but I don't know about the people.
Right. Audrey, what do you think then?
I agree. I will not trust the people, but then the service.
Mm.
I'm open to that, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, allowing something like Alexa into your home already kinds of, you're signing away some
privacy.
Yeah.
A lot,
of course,
yeah.
You know, and then of course Amazon also has their cloud cam and their Echo speaker that can, you know, turn off your lights, turn on your lights, you know, tell you when your fridge needs to be stocked up. So that's an invasion of privacy as well. So I guess it's just how much you're willing to let go.
I think you're right, and I think that the big difference there is that the others that you gave mention to, the Alexa, the fridge, and everything, that's a digital kind of access, whereas something like this is a physical kind of access. It's crossing that boundary, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think it's at that point where we've got to decide whether or not we're going to allow that kind of crossover to happen, I suppose.
Yeah, in a way, with the digital stuff, with Alexa and Amazon Echo and things, you have this kind of fourth wall of the fact that it's technology and it can't do anything, and you tell it what to do. Whereas with this, you kind of break that fourth wall and you allow a whole other person into your home that you don't know, and you're not going to be at home.
Mm.
You know, I mean, getting deliveries even when I'm at home, for example, is already kind of a bit terrifying, because it's like you have to let them up into the gate and the door and all that stuff. So that is something that I think really crosses a line that I don't know if people will want to cross.
Mm. Okay, we're going to take a short break with some music in a sec. We were asking, though, Apple are launching this technology-enabled healthcare service. We were asking whether or not you think it's better to have this kind of stuff in-house or maybe to move it to a medical panel. Let us know what you think. Get us on Twitter. We're at BFM Radio, or, of course, on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. And add up next, followed by some music by the Arctic Monkeys. And when we get back, how the former CEO of Twitter has shut down his fitness startup after just 8 months. We'll tell you why in just a few minutes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Be faithful, men. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio by
Audrey Raj
and Christine Wong.
We are with you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon. We are moving on to story number three. Mr. Dick Costolo explains why he shut down his fitness startup after just 8 months.
Yeah, so for a little bit more context, Dick Costolo is actually Twitter's former CEO, and he has actually started quite a few companies before. He has actually had six startups in his career, and he's had plenty of startups success, including FeedBurner, which sold to Google, and an internet bubble era company called SpyOnIt, which also sold to a company called 724 Solutions. But this particular startup, he kind of gave up on for a very interesting reason. So this particular app was called Chorus. And the idea was that using Chorus, teams of friends could sign up as a group, and then each person would declare their workout plans to the rest of the group for each day of the week. And the idea was that social accountability and social motivation are the only way to get people to do the things that they kind of don't want.
Otherwise known as peer pressure.
To do. Yes, that. But what they noticed was that even though it was attracting new users, a lot of people were not keeping up with using the app consistently. So people would start using it and then would bail after like 4 weeks or 8 weeks, and then they would drop the ball. But that was the exact problem that the app was trying to solve. So this kind of led to, you know, a discussion about this problem that they found out called the abstinence violation effect. And what this does is that if a group of people is coming together for a cause or for some to motivate each other, to support each other, but one person fails to meet these group's expectations, they tend to hide from their support group as opposed to turning to the group for
They
support.
Run away.
Yes. So the idea is that even though the whole concept is to try and motivate each other, the moment you fall off the wagon even a little bit, you feel like ashamed and humiliated and you don't want to.
And of course, once you're off that wagon, it's even more difficult to get back on it again.
Exactly. Yeah. So people who then use the app, fell off the wagon once, would then be like, oh, I kind of don't know if I want to get back into this. And then they would turn off the notifications, so the app never really took off. So I just thought it was kind of interesting because I've had a similar experience with this kind of phenomenon where I use the app MyFitnessPal, and you can track other people's, actually connect it, I believe, to your Facebook account and see like, hey, are you eating healthily? And am I eating healthily? And can we all discuss this and go on walks and such and build up the exercise? But every single time, I've maybe used it for about 2 weeks and then I've stopped.
Why did you stop?
Just because the moment there would be something that would come up, there would be like an event I need to go to or a friend I need to catch up with, and then that would inevitably, you know, cut into the way that the MyFitnessPal app would work, because then you would go above your calorie limit or whatnot and all this stuff. And then that made me feel really guilty, and I was like, well, I'm going to just not look at those numbers for a while.
I think everyone out there is hardwired to suffer from AVE. Now, I heard about the abstinence violation effect, I think maybe a couple of years ago.
Right.
And I think it's best defined when you put it into the context of someone who's suffering from, alcoholism, right? So this happens when a person attempting to abstain from alcohol, they kind of have one drink, and then so they fall off the bandwagon. They have one drink, and then they feel so guilty. They feel so conflicted, and then in order to kind of make themselves feel better, have another drink, and in order to cope with having that first drink, right? And so the problem with this is that that first lapse has a potential to become a relapse, and then consequentially a collapse.
Right.
Yeah, but what was really ironic about this was that was the problem that Chorus was trying to solve in the first place, was this idea of, you know, it's okay if you fall off the wagon once, but we can support you, we can get together. But people's psychologies don't work like that. And so they actually tried all sorts of things to overcome this. They had trainers on the platform that could answer questions. They were allowing people to do one-day challenges. They were encouraging conversation, encouraging posting a weekly plan. But no one really actually did any of that stuff because they already felt so guilty about it. that, so this is why now. So with the case of this, Dick Costolo specifically said that, you know, they could have still made money by charging people subscriptions up front. They could have done all that stuff. The fitness industry is full of tactics like that. But he and his team didn't have any interest in that business if it wasn't going to be consistent. And he just kind of said, it's time to pack course in. It didn't have a business model that he and the team wanted to pursue. And that he says they were running against hardwired human behavior.
It wasn't there any way to kind of pivot? To kind of make this business model work in that, a different segment, maybe?
That would have been the other option. But I think out of all the startups that, that he's had, he kind of felt he was able to sacrifice this one. Because I mean,
he's a smart enough man to know when something is not working and walk away from it, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's quoted here saying that it's always a hard decision to know when to keep going and when to shut down, because all startups go through these wild swings where there's reason to believe the business will be successful, reasons to think it won't. But in the end, he kind of, I think overall, he felt like it wasn't worth pivoting, and it was a business model that just wasn't working.
I suppose, you know, what would we call it here? You know, when somebody says they're going to come for something, and they say they do, and then at the end, FFK, right?
Yes.
Right? That's what this whole thing sounds like. Would that be the same thing? This, right? Because I'm accused of it regularly by a former co-host of mine. You know, Richard, you're supposed to come to this event, and I'm like, yeah, I'm coming. And then at the last minute, I'm like, no, I don't want to go. And
but then again, you don't not go for the next event because you missed the last one already.
Right.
And, so it's not a continuous process.
It is. It's just I just never go to the event. But I think part of this is I'm really against the idea of peer pressure, and I have been for a very long time. And I think an idea behind this app, which kind of uses that idea to almost guilt you into want to doing, or in doing these things, it really makes me. I don't know.
I'm uncomfortable with
this. Yeah, I'm uncomfortable with it. And especially like when I've installed apps like you have, Chris, you know, there was one I think was called Drill Sergeant or something like that a friend of mine had, you know, and every now and again it would send you a message. It's like, hey, you've not done your workout in 45 days, you know, and why are you not carrying on with it? And I'm like, you know what? I can just switch you off. I can just turn you off.
Exactly. I also don't know if anyone out there struggles with this idea where you want to do a task and then someone else tells you to do the task and immediately you're like, I'm not going to do that anymore.
Right.
So for some reason, you know, you already were planning to do it, but the fact that someone else has told you that you have to suddenly makes you not want to do the task anymore. Because that's something that I think might have factored into this, where maybe there was a notification like, hey, you haven't done a workout yet. And it's like, oh, well,
yeah,
I'm not going to do it now. You've reminded me
to. I'm just going to switch off that notification.
Exactly.
Right now. Okay. Let's have a music break. And then when we come back, moving on from things that have failed or rather been decided to be left behind, a thing all about Yay Days.
I've never heard
of Yay Days.
Yeah, but I think it's something that we need to look into.
Yay.
And seriously consider.
Yes. If you're listening, boss, have a listen. Right. Some music up next. It is Cream, Born Under a Bad Sign. We'll be right back in just a few minutes here on BFM 89.9.
Bole Fikir Mandalam, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. Moving on to story number four. One of the best companies in America, allegedly, gives employees yay days to take off work.
Yes.
So what are yay days?
Before we get into what yay days are, let me tell you about this company and why it's called one of the best companies in America. They're called REI, and they are basically a retail chain that sell outdoor clothing, gear, and footwear from top brands. So they're pretty much the kind of company that want you to get out there and do things outdoorsy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of course. And so in order to get their own employees to go outdoors and do outdoorsy things.
Right.
They've created this thing called the Yay Days. So
you
receive two Yay Days a year.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it. Hold on. Baby steps, Rich. So in addition to their vacation time, sick leave, and other leave of absence policies, the retail chain, which, by the way, is a consumer's cooperative, meaning it's owned by members and their own employees. They don't really have shareholders. They also offer their employees these biannual Yay Days. So the Yay Days are meant to be spent engaging in your favorite outdoor activity or helping create access to inspiration. Places through stewardship. That is the official reason for it. So people literally can use them to go have fun in the outdoors. So when you request your Yay Day, you have to tell your manager what you're going to do with it. You'll receive a Yay Day coupon. I can't believe I'm seeing Yay Day so many times, but okay. Employees will then have to fill out this small card explaining what they're yaying about, and then they have to sign it and turn it into their managers. And it kind of ties back to REI's commitment to helping their employees embark outside on adventures outside.
Can you say yay one more time?
No. So the retail chain is called one of America's best companies because they were named as part of the Glassdoor's 2018 Employees' Choice Awards for employees' favorite places to work. So they were one of the 100 companies that people really enjoyed working at. And they kind of looked into what is keeping REI's employees happy and engaged. And they found out that a lot of people at REI, they do enjoy going outdoor. It was kind of like a common passion. But this passion, I mean, think about it, Rich. I mean, what you enjoy doing outdoors, what I enjoy doing outdoors, what Chris enjoyed doing outdoors is going to be completely different. But they have no kind of limit to what you can do. So you can take a yay day and go hiking, and Chris can take a yay day and go to the beach, and I can take a yay day and go to the dog park.
Right.
Isn't that great?
Right. But for us, it would be like we could take a yay day and we'd have to go and sit and listen to a radio lecture or something, that or listen to a radio show. It's kind of the limiting behind it, I think, is a little bit, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it makes me a little bit skeptical.
I mean, for a company that specializes in the outdoors, I think that definitely works as a model for them.
Right.
But I feel like if you were to apply that to a more general way, and you would apply that to a different company or something, maybe more of just a mental health kind of day.
Right,
where you
just take,
like, you know, biannual or whatnot, just to take a breather,
yep,
not have to worry about anything. Go and just have a day where you can relax and do whatever indoors or outdoors.
I was telling Audrey about that. Very same thing this morning. In the UK, certain companies have this thing called the duvet day, you know, where you wake up and you're just like, you know what, I don't feel like going into work today. I'm going to have a duvet day. And you call your boss and you say, I'm having a duvet day. That's it. No questions asked. It's just a day off because you don't feel like going to work. And we all get days like that. Let's be honest.
Yeah, you know? But how do you take a duvet day when you have to be on live at 12 noon?
Exactly. You can't just do it, you know, in a job like ours. But I suppose, you know, for many other industries where, you know, things are a little bit less timely, you're allowed to do that.
Yeah, but a yay day is something that you can plan ahead.
I think it's a good idea.
If you're feeling slightly burnt out and you need a day to be excited about, to just get out there, you know, enjoy
a nice hike somewhere, get out in the
sun.
I guess my other question is also, you know, what constitutes an outdoor activity? Is it just leaving the office? Does that count? Are you already outdoors?
I guess that's what.
No. But I want to know, because it's like, how do you moderate if they're actually doing that activity or not? They could be saying that they're doing an outdoor activity and then just curling up in a duvet at home.
Mm. That's why I guess you have those Yay Day coupons where you have to get your manager's okay and a signature on your Yay Day coupon.
But she's right, though, because, you know, your manager could sign it off, and then at the end you could just be like, you know, well, I woke up in the morning and it was raining.
Yeah.
So I decided to stay home. And they can't really argue against that, can they, I suppose?
You guys.
Just you know, rules are meant to be
when you look
bent,
at the loopholes,
right?
You have to just make sure that you're all covered.
Mm-hmm.
And also another reason why REI is possibly, have introduced the Yay Day is their workers get, I think, a 50% employee discount on REI gear.
That
coincides with their Yay Day activity.
Oh, you're going hiking tomorrow, are you? Well, we've got these crampons here in the background. You know, these are like half price for you. Okay, time for a break. Some Green Day up next with Basket Case. When we get back, final story of the day, how Vodafone are installing 4G networks on the moon. I'll say that again, on the moon. Music, Basket Case from Green Day, BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. Final story of the day. We've spoken about a whole bunch of stuff so far. Apple employees, healthcare. Amazon are buying a smart doorbell firm. Twitter's former CEO has shut down his fitness startup. We talked about Yay Days. Now we're talking about the moon. So the moon will have a 4G mobile network installed next year, according to plans set out by Vodafone and Nokia.
Yeah.
You don't sound very excited. Come on. No, okay, right. The mission, organized by space exploration company PT Scientists, will be the first ever privately funded moon landing. No excitement? Okay. Nokia Masts will be launched on a SpaceX rocket in 2019 from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station in Florida. Okay. The network will enable Audi lunar exploration vehicles to communicate with each other and with a base station. The 4G signal provided by Vodafone will also be able to transmit high-definition video streaming of the moon's surface.
Back to Earth,
yeah. Here's a quote. This project involves a radically innovative approach to the development of mobile network infrastructure. The vehicles are exploring the moon as a potential human habitat, and the introduction of a 4G network is hoped to be the first step to creating a communications infrastructure for future lunar missions.
Go on. Okay, I'm getting this now. Okay.
Right. So the network will help to save energy, as mobile signal is more energy efficient than analog radio. The great thing about this LTE solution is that it saves a lot of power, and the less energy they use to send data, the more they can do science. The launch of the network may mean the moon will have a 4G signal, while many parts of the UK and, in fact, KL struggle to connect still.
Yeah, that's my main kind of... that's my main beef with this particular story is that I believe Malaysia has one of the worst 4G speeds in
Correct.
The world,
Correct,
if not
yeah.
the worst and 4G of, speed in the world.
And one of the worst broadband speeds as well.
So we can do that on the moon, but we can't do that here on the planet Earth.
I mean, the beautiful thing is, you know, I have a better 4G signal on the east coast of Malaysia, on one of the tiny islands, than I do here in the heart of KL. You know, I mean, this just frustrates the heck out of me, and
yeah.
I do not understand why.
As cool as it is, though, I think, you know, having the 4G network and being able to stream the high-definition video of the moon is interesting. However, there is also the fact that what is there to see on the moon exactly?
Well, there's lots of rocks and
oh,
there's lots
so
of
so that
dust
was my problem when I first read the story. But then, you know, like Rich just said, it's for potential
Correct.
Future communication
Correct, yeah.
for when we have people on the moon.
And eventually.
I mean,
come on. I mean, it does mean that we are, in fact, going back to the moon, you know, which was one of the most pivotal moments in human history and made
True.
Me really stupidly excited. When I read that today, I'm like, okay, there's potential that Elon might actually get there. But if Nokia and Vodafone are there first, that would irritate the heck out of me. You know,
yes, it would.
I like the idea of it, though. I mean, because it kind of, even though it's a 4G network and it's a phone network and whatever, it's romanticizing the idea of man getting back up into space and doing something to send back home, I think, is what kind of appealed to me about it.
Yeah. I agree with that. And also, I do like the idea because it would be interesting to see how that technology works on the moon.
Right.
You know, I don't know how any of it really works, but can you just imagine calling the moon, you know?
But then it would give us a solid argument when we do phone our cell phone companies, you know, and they're like, hang on a minute, you know, I know my signal's not so good, but I'm just talking to my friend on the moon right now.
Yes.
Yet I can't talk to them at the other side of Malaysia. What's going on?
Yeah.
You know?
But you know what, coming back to what you said earlier, Christine, 4G connectivity in Malaysia, it's not so bad. We're about like almost 70%. This is according to like stats from end of 2016. But when it comes to our speed, it's not so great. You were right. We were at the bottom end of the the graph there.
Right.
Yeah.
Why are we so far down that list? Why?
I don't know.
Well, if the moon can do it, so can we. Let's get on it.
Right. Okay, it's time for us to wrap up for the day, of course. But let's quickly run through the stories that we covered for the day. We started off with
Apple are going to launch a technology-enabled healthcare service that they're calling AC Wellness Networks.
Yeah, and then Amazon has bought a smart doorbell firm that could potentially in the future see your delivery person open your front door and place your parcel in your home for you.
Fun. And then we talked about how Twitter's former CEO explains why he shut down his fitness startup after only 8 months, and that is due to the abstinence violation effect.
Yes, and then that story about the Yay Days, one of the best companies in America. They're giving employees Yay Days to take off work and just go outdoors and do something fun.
Then we wrapped up with how the moon will have a 4G mobile network installed next year, according to plans set out by Vodafone and Nokia. That was our final story, but don't go anywhere, of course, because coming up after the 1 o'clock news, we have the breakfast Grill Replay, a global leader in the fast-growing workspace as a service, the WaaS sector. Regus has almost 3,000 centres in more than 100 countries and 1,000 cities across the world. The Breakfast Grill spoke to Regus country head for Malaysia, Brunei and Indonesia. His name is Vijayakumar Tangarasam. He's on the increased demand of co-working spaces, the regional landscape and challenges that they face. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. Don't go anywhere though, because we we have some music first. It is Arcade Fire with The Suburbs. We will be back, of course, tomorrow at noon. My name is Rich Bradbury. On behalf of Audrey Raj and Christian Wong, this has been Enterprise BizBytes here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.